I'm Max Clark. I'm going to talk about some things I see when negotiating contracts and mistakes that people make. So the first thing to talk about is why contracts matter. Contracts matter when the relationship is ending. Well, it matters when the relationship's ending or when one side wants to enforce a boundary. And that's when the contracts come into play. When you're in a honeymoon phase with a provider and everything's lovey-dovey, or the provider is trying to get more out of you in the relationship, everything is fantastic, everything's going great, there's no problems, it's all just sunshine and roses. Now, when you get to a point where a boundary is trying to be enforced, or worse, where the relationship is ending, this is when the contracts come into play. Now, when you are negotiating a contract, there's a bunch of things that really matter, and there's a bunch of things that are going to matter to your lawyers. Reps and warranties, limitations of liability, venue, jurisdiction, mechanics of how it gets enforced, things along those lines. When we look at contracts for our clients, what we're looking for comes into how we manage risk for them. And what I mean by that is, what terms govern financial implications or service implications within that contract? So the most common things, and these are the things that are on our checklist that we start with before we even look at anything else. Does the contract auto-renewal? How does the contract auto-renew? How do you prevent the contract from auto-renewing? Is that defined in the agreement? Is it not defined in the agreement? So that's important. If you want to terminate that contract early, if you're in term, what happens? How do you terminate early? What is the penalty for terminating early? You're going to see this defined as either an early termination liability or an early termination fee, ETFs and ETLs. What's the actual reality of that termination? So for instance, I've seen a lot of agreements that have 100% ETF language built into it. And I will tell you from experience in this in court, judges don't like enforcing 100% ETF language. So, you know, hint for providers out there, 100% ETF doesn't work. Also hint for on the client side, if you see somebody trying to enforce 100% ETF, chances are they haven't litigated that agreement yet because it's not enforceable. We look for what's your rights to terminate without penalty? So commonly within contracts for IT services, you're going to have a service level agreement. And there's going to be phrasing within the actual contract, usually the master services agreement, that's going to say that the sole remedy under non-performance for the provider is defined in the SLA. And then you go and you find the SLA document, and the SLA document is going to start defining all these crazy things for service credits. And it's going to say, if we have an outage for 5 minutes and 24 seconds with or latency over 62 milliseconds or jitter beyond this point or something else. And it's always usually extremely technical. These things happen. And usually after a threshold, what happens is some sort of credit gets issued. Now, this is not a penalty or payment back to you as a customer in this situation. It is a credit on a future invoice. And oh, by the way, pay really close attention to this. What is the SLA enforcement mechanism and how do you actually request an SLA credit in the first place? Usually it requires the provider to acknowledge the outage and it requires you to request it via a ticket within a set amount of time from the actual outage itself. So if you don't do that, you're not getting the credit anyways. Now, credits are they're good, but they're it's a really weak mechanism for you as a client within a contract with a provider. Because the penalty is relatively weak for that provider, especially if you're dealing with a high margin service. If you're dealing with something like a voice over IP or a UCaaS platform, it's more than 90% margin. So it's not really that significant of a penalty for the provider. So what we like to do is we like to make sure that we define exits and the right for the client to terminate the contract under SLA breaches. Now, again, you're going to tell a lot about the provider by how they negotiate this with you and what they're looking for. But really what we're looking for is we're looking for a breakup provision or a right to terminate the contract without penalties for our clients based on non-performance and SLA violations. So if the provider is violating their own SLA that they write at some threshold, the client has the right to say, this isn't working for us and we're going to move on. Now, there's other things that you want to have in these agreements. Understanding what your force majeure rights are very important. So force majeure, what have we seen? Major fires in California, pandemic, of course, in 2020, supply chain issues as a result of that. There was just an earthquake in Japan Previously, you see hard drive supplier shortages with the tsunami in Thailand. These sorts of things actually do impact and apply to you, and how that language is written becomes more and more important. Now, what we're looking for within these things becomes managed risk and measured risk. So if this relationship sours, what happens and what do you do about it? If the provider is not performing, what can you do about it? What do you do about it? How do you get away from a provider that's not performing and damaging your business and being able to replace that provider with another solution, another provider that actually can meet your needs and help you stay in business and grow? So I've seen a lot of time spent in contract negotiations where lawyers are focused on arguing what word is used and what section, what semicolon or comma exist where. And these become important measures if you start talking about the technical implications of enforcing that contract and how that contract is supposed to read. There's a pretty famous case with, I believe it was a dairy farm, and how they were classifying their drivers and do they qualify for overtime or not. And this came down, I mean, the judgment came down to a comma where the comma was placed. So very important, yes. The way I look at it and think about it is you do not want to get to a point where you're fighting over where a comma is in your contract. If you're litigating that contract, you just want the right to say, thank you very much, this didn't work out, and move on with your life. Either you want to know that this is only going to cost you a certain amount of money and you're going to move on with your life, or you're, you know, going to be able to execute an SLA provision and walk away with some notice and move on with your life. And these things are our top priorities when we're doing contract reviews with our clients. Now, I'll talk a little bit about ETF language. So again, most commonly you're going to see an agreement that's going to say that the ETF is 100% of the remaining term. Now, if you go to that provider and you say, we're not going to sign a contract that has 100% ETF, that provider should do one of two things really for you. The first thing that provider should do is they should offer you a price list and a pricing service schedule for a shorter term. And this is probably the sanest way for most providers to deal with this stuff. Here's your price for 36 months. We don't want to sign a 36-month contract. Okay, no problem. Here's a price for 12 months. But it still has 100% ETF in that, but this is the price for 12 months. Now you can use a strategy with this of signing for 12 months and then pushing for a renewal at less rate at the end of those 12 months, which isn't guaranteed, but you can get into that kind of game, mainly because that provider is already established and they know that the cost of churn is higher than the cost of just giving you a better price, especially if there's a competitive bid coming in. You can usually leverage that and take advantage of that. Now, the negative of that, of course, becomes the price goes up. What was probably pretty cheap at 36 months becomes much, much more expensive at 12 months. On the other end of this, we have a lot of providers in our portfolio that have standard language of 50% ETF. So if you sign a 36-month contract and on month 6, you decide to cancel, it's 50% of 30 months remaining, you're writing a check for 15 months worth of service. And that's a very, I think, reasonably appropriate ETF language for both the provider and the provider and you as the customer. Now, okay, so third one that's pretty common is we'll see 100% ETF for the first year, and then you'll see step down for additional periods within that term. So maybe it's 100% year one, and then 80% year two, and then 60% year three, and so on and so forth. And also, depending on how that language is actually written, pretty reasonable. So what the provider is trying to deal with is covering their costs and their outlay under that agreement and their contract, what they're providing service to you, right? So what their risk is really recouping what their cost is plus whatever margin they need in order for it to make sense. So understanding what the provider's actual cost structure is becomes very critical for you if you want to start negotiating these ETFs. So if you're dealing with an aggregator or a reseller, somebody that's reselling a service, what are they reselling and what are their terms with their service provider, right? So if you're dealing with somebody who's reselling one of the ILEC, right? So what's their term, what's their language with the ILEC? If they have a 50% ETF language with that ILEC, and most likely if they have a signed contract, they also have the right to move service within a certain period of time. So now if this, that your maximum ETF to that reseller should only be 50%, and you should also have language in there that says if they're successfully able to relocate that service within X period of time, that your ETF should probably not even be 50%, right? Now you have to pay, it'd be reasonable for you to pay a fee for the inconvenience that they have to go through and whatever cost they have to bear in that process. But is it really costing them 100% to terminate? No, of course not. So knowing what those numbers are and knowing what that structure is will help you as you're negotiating your own contract language. Now, let's see, what else should we talk about here? So ETFs, also commonly, you'll see provisions where your rates are protected inside of the term. But once the contract goes month to month, then the rate can go to market. This becomes a really interesting one. Some providers will go month to month, and then they'll immediately double the cost once you hit month to month to try to reinforce a new contract term. Understanding what that looks like, whether or not you can or cannot negotiate that in the first place is good to know. And as a strategy, in a lot of cases, we'll advise our clients as part of their initial order when they're signing and executing the first contract to immediately submit a termination notice. So if we were not able to negotiate a month-to-month renewal extension of after the initial term and the provider really dug their heels in and was forcing some sort of annual renewal terms, just send them notice immediately. Give them termination notice. There's nothing that says, termination language says that you have to provide notice before some date. By default, it's usually 90 days. Doesn't say that you can't, that it has to be within a certain range. So you sign a 36-month contract, your termination notice has to be sent before month 3, 90 days beforehand. Why not send it month 36? Hey, we're just giving this there up front, so that way we don't have this issue down the road, and we look forward to working together and making sure that we renew. I mean, it's not even costal to do it that way. It's great. Absolutely do that. Just remember that your contract is terminating out. Now, this becomes really interesting. So paying attention to what your renewal terms are and when your contracts come up. By the way, I've only seen this with one provider, and it was the most amazingly hostile activity from a provider that we've seen, where this company was looking at evaluating whether or not they were going to continue to renew the service. They asked the provider to terminate the auto renewal and go month to month with them. And the provider came back and said, no, if you terminate with us, the service is over on this date and we're shutting you down. And the company did not give themselves enough time to deal and look at an alternate, which that incumbent provider knew. And they were forced into an auto renew for another year. That provider maintained that customer for another year. And that customer then, of course, was spent that next year to make sure that they were ready to migrate off and terminate that contract. And we'll never use that provider ever again for the rest of eternity. So short-term wins for long-term losses, right? It's one of those win the battle but lose the wars kind of things. Now, there's reasonable. So going back to this earlier statement I made about risk and financial risk, right? If you are negotiating a contract that has a monthly service cost of $500 and it's a 36-month contract, and so you're dealing with a $6,000 a year expense with an $18,000 total liability under that contract, do not spend $25,000 negotiating terms in that contract, right? Like, there, if I had a dollar for every time I've seen this, it is just, there's a certain point where what you're negotiating just isn't worth it anymore. Now, if you're negotiating a master services agreement and you intend to grow that service from $5,000 to $50,000 or $500,000, then it makes sense to negotiate that. And by the way, you can always negotiate that later. But I've seen a lot of contracting cycles get completely derailed because counsel gets involved and wants to just go absolutely crazy with a red pen on an agreement, and you get this contract back, and you look at it and you're like, this contract is worth $10,000, right? Like, there's like, you're gonna really argue every paragraph of a 6-page MSA because that's just what you feel like? Are you bored? And usually in those cases, the providers will just say no. And again, a lot of providers will not negotiate contracts under certain dollar values because it's not worth it to them, especially if they have reasonable mutual language in their agreement and they know it. And this is when you get, again, you go back to what is really important to you and what do you care about in that agreement to protect yourself, and what does that really look like? Almost every provider is going to have the same limitations of liability, right? Their liability is limited to the total dollar amount that you've paid them in some period of time. Are you going to be able to change that? Probably not. By the way, providers cannot contract. You can't protect yourself against negligence and intentional acts in a contract, right? So like, seeing people waste a lot of time trying to change language related to that. It doesn't matter. You walk into court because of intention of negligence or an intentional act by an employee of the provider, and all bets are off. My other favorite one that I see all the time is related to bankruptcies. Of course, you get all this language inserted about, in the case of bankruptcy, this contract is null and void and blah, 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 this and that and the next thing. And guess what? The minute that bankruptcy happens, a TRO goes into place and everything is controlled by a federal judge. And you are not going to that judge and saying, Your Honor, my contract says that the contract is null and void because of bankruptcy. And that judge is going to look at you and just be like, no, it's not. I'm in control here. Deal with it, basically. So don't waste a lot of time trying to negotiate bankruptcy provisions in these agreements, because it doesn't matter. If you haven't been through a bankruptcy with a service provider, or if you're a service provider and you haven't been through a bankruptcy with one of your customers as an unsecured creditor in that line, it's an eye-opening experience, because what you think matters actually doesn't matter anymore. Anyways, I'm Max Clark. Hope this helps you. If you have any questions, let me know in the comments below, and I will answer them as best as I can. Have a great day.